We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday. It's the 26th of October, 2018. I'm Jamie Veitch, your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we are, of course, broadcasting live from the Sheffield Live radio studio here in the centre of Sheffield. We're going out on FM radio. We're going out through our internet live stream too. And however you're listening, the show is also available as a podcast from the Sheffield Live website. So talking podcasts. Last Friday, Steve Rimmer came into the studio with us, and we're talking with Steve about Tickets for Good and the Ticket Bank, and about their platform, which enables them to sell tickets to all sorts of fantastic events and give tickets to people who otherwise would not be able to access events, cultural events, concerts, gigs, and much, much more in Sheffield. Steve talked about the Festival of Debate, Migration Matters, and other entities that they have been working with too. And he also touched on the Aberdale Picture House, because he's involved with CADS, and they have, of course, taken on CADS, and they've taken on the Aberdale Picture House. The building is now thriving. So that was last Friday. If you missed the show, then the podcast is up on the Sheffield Live website at sheffieldlive.org. Look up radio shows, find Business Live, you'll find it there. But who's on today? Well, I'm really pleased that Ashley Carson, Sheffield's Assay Master, is here in the studio with us. Loads of exciting stuff to talk about with Ashley, and we'll bring him in to the conversation in just a moment or two. Before we do, though, what's been going on in business, in social enterprise? What's been going on with you? Well, aircraft manufacturing giant Boeing has this week officially opened its first European manufacturing facility in Sheffield. And the 64,500 square foot factory is located alongside the Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre. It's going to produce over 100 different high-tech components for Boeing's 737 and 767 passenger airplanes from raw materials sourced within the UK. It represents a Boeing investment of over £40 million, and it has created 52 jobs, including more than 20 apprenticeship roles. Boeing currently employs over 2,000 people in the UK and spends around £2 billion a year in the supply chain. So great for Sheffield, and great for the region too. So, as I mentioned, what's been going on with you? What's been going on in your business or social enterprise? Don't forget, you can get in touch. Send me a note or a text about whatever you've been up to. Drop me an email, jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. And whether you're running or starting a business or social enterprise, we're always keen to hear from you. I think it's time to turn to our guest today. Ashley Carson's in the studio. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, it's Friday, the sun's shining outside, and looking forward to the weekend. It's been a busy week at work.
A busy week at work indeed. So we're just talking before starting the show. You've had a gala dinner was held this week on Tuesday, and that was somewhat celebratory. You are celebrating this week 25 years in post as the Assay Master. How can that be? You look about 40, Ashley.
Thank you. Looks are very deceiving, I can assure you.
But you were actually the youngest ever appointed Assay Master when you were appointed. So can I ask, how old are you? How old were you when you were appointed?
Yeah, I was appointed at the age of 32.
Right, yeah. So 25 years this week. Congratulations. That is amazing. I think you're the second longest serving, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I think there was an Assay Master that served 40 years.
So right.
I think it's going to be difficult to top that. But I think the average is about 18 years.
Yes.
In the history of the Assay Masters, I'm the 13th in the line since 1773.
Right, now this is remarkable. Since 73. Sorry. Right, so what does an Assay Master do? What's the role?
Well, I guess really it's chief executive, in effect, of the Assay Office, but it's also kind of a little bit more than that. It's A legal oath is sworn when I took up office, and I'm responsible for basically all the hallmarks that are applied at the Sheffield Assay Office. So, yeah, I'm ensuring that when that hallmark is put on an item, that we take the responsibility for the purity of the metal and guaranteeing that.
Okay, great. So that's a big responsibility in terms of the purity of the metal there. And it's a responsibility, and the hallmark is well recognised internationally.
Yeah, the UK hallmarks are recognised throughout the world. You know, and everybody looks to our marks, and, you know, we constantly keep coming back to Brexit and what's going to happen with things like that. But, you know, when you talk to other countries in terms of hallmarking, I don't believe it'll make any difference because people want the UK hallmark. So, you know, forget all these kind of things. They look at the marks, other countries, they come to us, they ask us for advice, they model European assay offices on what we do in the UK as well. So yeah, we're looked at with a lot of envy really throughout the world when you've got some assay offices that have only been open maybe for 2 years or 5 years,
right?
And you know, we go back into the 1300s.
Yes, so this is remarkable. So we go back to the 1300s. What's the history here? I can think of rogue goldsmiths trying to rip people off. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I mean, it does go back to the 1300s, and this is when the gold and the coinage was kind of in doubt. And hallmarking all started in London with the London Assay Office. And they go back to the 1300s, and they had people from the hall that would go out to silversmiths, to metal workers, and they would test their products. And if they were found to be okay, they would put the mark of the hall, which was Goldsmith's Hall. So they would apply the mark of the hall onto the items, which is where we get the word hallmark.
Right, yeah.
So originally it was the mark of the hall, and then as the years went by, there was other assay offices opened, and gradually we got into the 1700s, and we're kind of new kids on the block, really. In 1772, there was a lot of lobbying in Sheffield. We hadn't got an assay office. We'd got silversmiths, we'd got people manufacturing, and the nearest assay office to Sheffield was Chester in those days. So the silversmiths in Sheffield used to make the articles. They used to get them on the back of the pack horse. They used to take them over the Pennines and take them to the Chester assay office to be hallmarked.
Right, that was some journey.
Only to find on the way back that the highwaymen would get hold of them and they would nick the items.
Oh, dear.
So there was a lot of lobbying, and the third Earl of Effingham, together with Matthew Bolton, who was a very well-known silversmith in those days from Birmingham, and they both decided, Birmingham and Sheffield, that they wanted an assay office each. So it had to be, an assay office has to be set up by an Act of Parliament.
Yes.
So they went to the government and they lobbied, and they were granted the Act, which enabled both Sheffield and Birmingham to open assay offices.
I see. Okay.
So going forward from there, they were told that they had to have a town mark. So as part of a hallmark, there is a town mark which tells you which assay office the items were hallmarked at. So they went off to celebrate afterwards to a pub on the Strand in London. And at the toss of a coin, the pub was called the Crown and Anchor. And at the toss of a coin, Sheffield got the crown and Birmingham got the anchor.
Really? That's an amazing story. So down to the toss of a coin.
So that's why a lot of people wonder why Birmingham is, you know, they are so far away from the sea, but their town mark is the anchor, and it's still the anchor today. I was changed in 1975. There was an update with the Hallmarking Act, and platinum then came in as well as gold and silver. So we could hallmark platinum, and the crown became part of the gold marks, and we took the Tudor rose instead.
Right, yeah.
So from 1975, we have the rose. A lot of people think it's the Yorkshire rose, but it's in fact the Tudor rose, which is a combination of the Yorkshire rose and the Lancashire rose.
Right, that's absolutely fascinating. Amazing story. And so we've heard a little bit of history there, but when this all came in, and after that historic initial setting up in terms of Sheffield and Birmingham, did people recognise the validity of the mark immediately? Did it take a while for people to understand?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. First of all, we were only empowered to hallmark silver.
Yeah.
I think really dating back as well, hallmarks were always seen as the constant kind of something that you could refer to, and you knew that what you were getting was correct when you saw the hallmarks on it. Even today, when you look on the Antiques Roadshow, you know, they look at the hallmarks. When people pick up the silver teapot and they say this is an exquisite teapot from 1824, how do they know it's 1824? They have a little book, they look at all the symbols, they compare the date letter, and they can date the piece. So it's nothing. It's nothing magical.
It's nothing magical, but these symbols have tell an amazing story, don't they? So we've talked about the hallmark for Sheffield. We've talked about the mark for Birmingham. Where else are there assay offices?
So Chester, unfortunately, closed down in the 1960s. We now only have we have four assay offices in the country.
Yes,
there is London, Birmingham, Sheffield, and Edinburgh. And London tends to get a lot of the prestigious pieces. They would hallmark the crown jewels, the royal wedding rings,
yes,
that sort of thing. They do a lot of trophies, and so you know they do the real high end, and they've also got Hatton Garden.
Yes.
Edinburgh tends to, they get a lot of all the Scottish kind of jewellery. People that go to Scotland want the Celtic designs, and they want to see the Edinburgh hallmark on it, which is the their town mark is the castle, as you would imagine with the Edinburgh castle. And then you have really, you've got Birmingham and Sheffield, which kind of we tend to get what's left, but what's left is predominantly the volume business. Mm-hmm. So anybody who sells any items of gold, silver, platinum or palladium have to have them hallmarked. So every time you look at a retailer's, whether it's the high street jewellers, the ones in Meadowhall, they all have to send the goods for hallmarking. So we tend to go after the volume business. So we have one or two very, very large accounts, people that's probably got over 200 retail outlets.
Yes.
We've got some very, very prestigious work that we hallmark as well, the real high end, which we've managed to attract as well to Sheffield, which is like the Bond Street, High Street Jewellers, and very exclusive kind of items. So we cater for those as well. The funny thing is that from Birmingham and Sheffield opening in 1773, and everything was all kind of locked together as a celebration then. Ever since then, we have fought Birmingham for business. Really? And we've been serious competitors ever since.
Okay, so it was collaborative when you opened in 1773 in terms of, right, we here in Sheffield and Birmingham, we need to do this, and now it's competitive.
That's competitive.
Absolutely. So anyone selling an item of gold, silver, platinum or palladium, they have to have it hallmarked. If you look at the hallmark, you can see a number of symbols, including the town mark. We talked about what the town mark of Birmingham is, the town mark of Sheffield, and how that changed in the 1970s, and it's the Tudor Rose, the town mark of other places too. You've talked about the business that you perhaps go after and competing with other offices, but particularly with Birmingham, but having some volume accounts. Now, volume, this is really interesting. We're talking millions of items, I think, that have been hallmarked during your period in office. How many?
Well, we're currently hallmarking about 2.5 million articles a year.
Yeah.
In Sheffield. There is throughout the UK, between the four assay offices, we hallmark just short of 10 million a year.
Right. Yeah.
So we're kind of doing bordering between 26% of the business.
Yes.
I worked it out the other day. It was part of my speech the other night at my dinner. I worked it out, and over the 25 years, I reckon I've overseen or certainly been responsible for the hallmarking of 100 million articles through Sheffield.
That's absolutely remarkable.
So it's a staggering figure, but 100 million articles.
It is staggering. It really is. And, I mean, this might be an obvious question to you, but it's not obvious to me. So I'm sorry if it is an obvious question, but out of gold, silver, platinum and palladium, what's the sort of split in terms of the items?
No, it's a very good question. It's I would say we're pretty even at the moment between gold and silver. So silver kind of, I think, is still slightly more dominant at the moment. It's very much a fashion kind of thing. The gold has been very quiet for a few years, but that's kind of more down to the economy as well.
Right.
People, at the end of the day, people will buy jewellery. It's a luxury item. And if people can afford it, then they'll go and buy things. Silver is less expensive than gold. And then at the top end, you have platinum and palladium, which are both, they're both platinum group metals. Palladium is probably it's probably about the price of, I would say, 14 carat gold. Platinum is more expensive than kind of pure gold. But palladium tends to be more for gents' wedding rings.
Right.
It's very hard wearing. It's a white metal. It's a little bit dull. Looks a bit like steel, stainless steel. Platinum is the high end. Again, that's very hard wearing. What tends to happen is the gent will get the palladium wedding ring, and the lady will pull rank, and she will get the platinum wedding ring.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah. Now that's an interesting one. So the pieces that you're hallmarking give you a picture in terms of the health of the economy. You've just talked about jewellery, perhaps jewellery as a luxury item, and you've talked about gold, for example, as a barometer of the economy. So, do you sort of get a gut feeling as to the health of consumers? Well, sorry, the confidence of consumers.
It's the jewellery business seems to be the first thing to go in a recession,
right?
And it's the last thing to come out.
Is that right?
So we have seen this for probably 6 or 7 years now, where the figures are much smaller than they used to be. There was a time about 10 years ago when between the four assay offices we were hallmarking 35 million items a year. And at the time, at the peak, we were hallmarking more in Sheffield than the total that are currently being hallmarked.
That's amazing.
So I had 180 staff. We haven't lost any customers over the years apart from one or two gone under, but we still got the same customers, but the volumes are just much smaller.
Yes.
So within our business, all the four assay offices are privately owned. A lot of people think that we are government, but we're not. We're privately owned, but we uphold a Government Act of Parliament. So we all have the same rules and regulations to work under. But the competition that government puts in place is that we have a maximum charge per article, but we can charge anything we like under that. So,
I see.
So that's where the competition comes in. So we, in Sheffield, because we're at the end of the day are in the sticks, really. We don't have the jewellery quarter in Birmingham. We don't have the luxury, of the Hatton Garden and the natural kind of work in London. So we have to work extremely hard in Sheffield to attract that business to us. We have a really efficient assay office. We are currently processing in excess of 10,000 items a day. We see the peaks now going as the shops are now stocking towards Christmas.
Right, yes.
We've seen very, very quiet times. But I think they are coming back. But, the one thing you don't want is, the uncertainty in investment, stock shares. Everybody's bailing out from stocks and shares and they start buying gold. And then the gold price starts going up,
yep,
which means it's more expensive to produce items. So the items become more expensive in the shops. So, we we like it really when the gold price is lower, which means that more people will manufacture gold, and yes, then ultimately the members of the public can afford it more as well. But we are seeing gold coming back well at the moment.
Right. Okay. That's really interesting. And what's the process then when you are hallmarking items? Are the manufacturers or the retailers your customers? And I'm sorry, that's probably, again, another really obvious question, but I don't know the answer, so I'm going to ask it.
No, anybody can send to an ASSE office for hallmarking, so it can be like a main high street jeweller that will send you all their stock. It could be a wholesaler who will then go on to sell to the high street jewellers. It can be a jeweller's shop that will... a manufacturing jeweller that might make one or two items a week, and they will send those in for hallmarking.
Yeah.
Or it could literally be yourself, you're digging your back garden, you find something in the soil, you think, this looks like gold to me. You could take it to the assay office and we would test it for you and tell you what it was.
Right.
So it can cover all sorts of things. We also get a lot of people that go and buy jewellery abroad. Unfortunately, some people make the mistake of buying things from countries where there's no hallmarking, there are no systems. They spend a lot of money on it. They bring it back. They want to get it insured because they've spent a lot of money on it.
Yep.
They bring it to the assay office and we will test it for them. And sometimes we have to tell them, I'm sorry, but it's gold-plated.
You have to disappoint someone.
I hope you had a nice holiday. You've got a lovely suntan, but I'm afraid the gold that you bought is perhaps worth about 50 pence instead of £200.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, you have to be careful when you go abroad and get things. So an item will be sent in to us, and we check the contents of every parcel. We have to have extremely tight systems and control systems in place so that that the person that sends one gold ring gets the one gold ring back.
Yes.
The person that sends me 1,000 chains gets their 1,000 chains back.
Yep.
And every single earring that comes in, we hallmark those, and we have to make sure that we don't lose anything. So we check all the weights when everything comes in. Everything is covered by cameras and documented in systems.
Yep.
And then we test the items. So we have to test every component of an item. So we would test it on a ring, we'd test the ring, we'd test the setting. On chains, we test the chain, we test the fasteners. So we test every single component of an item. When we're satisfied that the items meet the required standards, we can then pass them through to be hallmarked. So we then have a production manager who will control this process. They will then issue them out to the staff, and then they collect the hallmark punch, and that is then what's going to be applied to the item. And we have to have punches that will cover items such as a silver tankard or a large tray, or right down to the pin of an earring.
Yes.
So all the marks have to go on there. And you start off with the sponsor's mark, which is the initials of the person that either made the piece or the company that would either import the pieces. So the company that takes ownership of the items, in effect.
Right.
So that's their initials.
Yeah, that's the first one.
So that's the first mark. After that, you then have the purity of the metal.
Yeah.
Now, we have different shape fields for the numbers to go inside. So depending on the shape of the field, you'll know whether it's gold, silver, platinum or palladium.
Right, okay.
And then inside that field, there are numbers, and those numbers denote the purity of the metal. So, and this is a percentage. So you have 925, which is sterling silver, and that is 925 parts per thousand, 92.5%.
Yeah.
So that's the purity of the metal. So 925 is sterling silver.
I see.
You have, you can have 375, that is the purity of 9-carat gold, 37.5%, 750, 18-carat gold.
Yep.
And 916, which is the highest purity that we hallmark, 916, 91.6%, and that tends to be more old wedding rings, very, very rich in colour. Or in Sheffield, we're very proud that we hallmark 65% of UK's Asian jewellery.
Really?
All comes to us.
Yeah.
So That is a very, very rich colour, 22 karat gold. So they're the numbers that tell you the purity of the metal. And then after that, you have the rose, which is our town mark.
Yes.
So you have the castle for Edinburgh, you have the rose for Sheffield,
yeah.
You have the anchor for Birmingham, and you have the leopard's head for London.
Mm-hmm.
So between those three marks, you know who sponsored the piece, the purity of the metal, and which assay office.
Yes.
After that, there is a date letter that can be applied. The date letter is an optional mark, and the date letter, it tends to go on the larger pieces, so silver, trophies, cutlery, which, you know, we still have a very, very active industry in Sheffield. The silversmiths are amazing in Sheffield. And all of those would specify they want the town mark on things.
Yes.
It's an optional mark these days, but it tends to get left off a lot of what I would say is everyday jewellery.
Right.
That's,
okay.
I would say, partly because it's a very small, it's a lot of the items that we hallmark carry a very small mark, and there isn't always a lot of room for the marks. So a lot of people may tend to say, look, we don't want the date letter on. So not every piece has the date letter. And then the other symbols, like the lion, which is on silver, and the crown, which is on gold, these are more decorative marks, and these can be applied as well. But again, on jewellery, you would basically just have the basic three marks.
Yes.
And then the other kind of the fancy marks, all the symbols and everything, all the singing, dancing, would go on to the larger pieces.
Yes. Because you don't have to have that mark, that later mark, to show what the metal is, because the field from the second mark shows you what the metal is.
Correct.
In any case, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. So once we've tested the products, which is a non-destructive testing these days, over the years we used to have a knife, very sharp blades, and physically remove the metal. So we used to scrape metal out off pieces, or even cut an earring up or a chain, cut the pieces out, and it was destructive testing. But I would say for the last 15 years, we've developed non-destructive testing.
Yes.
And it's an X-ray machine. And the machines we have are, they look about, they're about the size of what you, a bread maker. And you open the lid, you put the piece inside it, and you can test every single component. And the machines we have now, in the olden days, it would take for a gold assay to go through, the laboratory, it would take 2.5 hours to test the purity. The machines these days will analyse the item in 10 seconds.
Is that right? Good grief.
So it's a very quick, rapid process, very precise. The machines we have range from cost between £30,000 and £45,000 each.
Right.
And so, you know, people sit there, trained staff will sit there and test the pieces. So once we're happy that everything is tested, it will be passed to marking. We have the traditional hammer and punch. So people will stand there and swing the hammer and crack the punch into the items. Beautiful marks, which is kind of what I like, really, all the, yes. the really nice historic marks. And then you've got we can press marks, so we have small press machines that can apply the hallmarks. And then again, we've moved forward into the 21st century, and we have laser machines, and we have laser hallmarks. So we have a computer image, and that computer image will then be translated down through laser and burn the mark into the item.
I see. Okay.
So they're the three options. The beauty of laser marking is we can hallmark hollow items. It's non-destructive. High-end, really high-value items where, you know, we're talking several thousand of pounds items. We can hallmark those by laser as well.
Yes.
So it's non-destructive and it doesn't bruise the item. And then once that's done, the process is completed. The items go back to be checked, all the contents are checked, they're packaged and dispatched back to the customer.
So that's absolutely amazing. That's been really fascinating to hear that process. And you've talked about how the actual machines that now using non-destructive testing and an X-ray machine, and I love this sort of idea of something that's about the size of a bread maker scanning something, can do it in 10 seconds, then you will press the mark or laser the mark on, however you choose to do it as in the most appropriate way for the piece. But that's really interesting. Does that mean that you have less skill necessary within the industry? I mean, is it metallurgists or scientists? Who are the people you employ to do the testing and put the mark on? And as technology has developed and improved, has that had an effect in terms of skills, or have skills needed to evolve and develop as well?
I would say the skills have just changed over the years, and people have had to adopt new skills. The using of XRF machines for testing the items is a skill. The knowledge base of testing pieces and understanding how pieces are assembled and produced, and then the interpretation of the XRF machines at the end of the day. You've got to understand those machines. You don't necessarily need to be a metallurgist. We train people in-house how to use the machines. And we have a wide range of people. We have housewives, we have students, we have graduates, we have right the way through, really. So, you know, we train a lot of people in-house. It's very difficult because when you advertise for people, you can't say must have previous experience in hallmarking because it's so unique that the odds are they don't really know what it is either. The amount of people that come for interviews that, you know, the best thing, the first thing you say to them is, tell me what you know about hallmarking. And it's a sure sign whether they're interested or not as to whether they've actually been on the website and had a look and had a quick look through and a bit of research to know what it's all about. But, you know, you can't get people in. We have a laboratory as well where we have over the last few years have diversified into a lot of other testing. We have an amazing reputation because we're an independent organisation and we do a lot of testing on other things. And for that, we do need specialist chemists.
Yes.
So right at the other end of the spectrum, we have people that have got degrees in metallurgy, chemistry, and the machines that they actually drive are very different machines.
I see.
They're 100,000-pound machines. They will analyse far more than the XRF machines will do. From that part, we're kind of a far away from the basic kind of traditional hallmarking side. So we have people with all kind of skill sets, really.
Yes.
And the one thing that you need at the end of the day when you're hallmarking and you sat there hallmarking every day is you've got to be skillful and you've got to be patient, you've got to be delicate. Because some of the items, as I say, that you are dealing with in your hallmarking are worth thousands of pounds.
Yes, yes,
and,
quite.
You know, our reputation is built on the back of that. Yeah. We've gained a lot of work over recent years just on our reputation of how we deal with the pieces.
Right, in terms of the care and attention and looking after pieces that are potentially worth huge amounts in terms of value, but also whatever the monetary value, you're talking about dealing with pieces that are potentially unique, have enormous sentimental or potential for enormous sentimental value as well. The reputation is really interesting because I think you've driven the reputation of the Sheffield Assay office during your 25 years here, and there are shops in London selling pieces bearing your hallmark, bearing our hallmark proudly. And it is internationally recognised, as we talked about at the start of the programme today. But reputation then is hard to build, easy to lose perhaps numerous examples of organisations curating a reputation over a long time, only to do something disastrous and damage it. How have you then built this reputation beyond that care and attention to detail that you've just talked about, Ashley?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point you make about London in particular. I remember kind of 25 years ago, when you would walk down the Bond Street or somewhere like that, Garrards, Aspreys, the Crown Jewel people.
Yes.
And you would look in their windows and everything would be London hallmarked.
Right.
You would not find anything with any other hallmark. And you would talk to people down there, and you would go into Harrods, into their cutlery and their silverware department, and everything was all London. And gradually over the years we've been able to break that down and sort of kind of work very hard to get Sheffield particularly on the map and get our marks acceptable elsewhere. And it is, at the end of the day, you've just got to keep going. You've got to set the standards high. You've got to expect that from your staff. And you've got to deliver that back to your customers. And certainly, I would say, over the last 10 years, that barrier has gone completely. And now there's, whether it's Burlington Arcade in London or wherever, they have Sheffield hallmarks and they're everywhere. And that for me is a massive pride for Sheffield.
Yes.
You know, we are on the map now, firmly on the map with, as you said this morning, with Boeing, with McLaren.
Yes.
And in fact, with McLaren, we had, there was a special commission. McLaren produced about 6 or 7 years ago now, they produced a special range of jewellery, and they had some stainless steel items which were decorated with titanium. But we were asked in Sheffield if we would we would obviously not hallmark these items, but we were they wanted the McLaren logos and the branding on the inside of these items. And we did all the branding for them with our laser machines.
Good grief.
And before we could complete the whole batch, there was the first samples had to go back to Ron Dennis, who was the supremo at the time.
Yes.
With McLaren, and he had to personally sanction them and sign them off before we could carry on with them. So I kind of thought to myself at that time as well, you know, we have actually made it here. Forget
yes.
the silver and everything else, but this is at another level, and we know, you know, the kind of where McLaren is in the world with what they are with engineering, and we've actually applied marks onto some McLaren products. So, you know, I look at that as a benchmark and look at that with some pride. Unfortunately, it didn't have our hallmark on it. But yeah, no, we are, you know, we're capable of doing that kind of thing in Sheffield, and particularly at Sheffield Assay Office.
Yes. Oh, you must be really proud of that capability, as well as of the reputation that we've just talked about as well. And you'll find the Sheffield mark in London and recognised internationally and held up proudly. So wonderful. So in your 25 years in post as the assay master, what else are you most proud of in terms of the achievements of the office here and your team and your staff? And how many staff are there now working with
I've
you?
Currently got 65 staff.
Yeah.
Work in Sheffield. We're based out in Hillsborough.
Yeah.
And 65 staff, ranging, you know, across all the business, about 25 in the labs.
Yes.
I'm proud of where we've diversified. I think, you know, hallmarking, if we're honest, is there is not enough business in hallmarking to keep us going as a business, so we have had to diversify.
Yes.
And that's something that I am proud of,
is
really trying to give us some stability for the future. I was proud with moving 10 years ago to our new assay office. We moved from the city centre, right in the, just off West Street, Portobello Street, right in the heart of the Sheffield University. They were taking over, they were crowding us out. It was becoming more and more difficult to get vehicles in and out.
Yeah.
And and the building we had, which we moved into we moved in 1956 into that building. It was a third assay office in Sheffield. We've been in top of Fargate. We were actually, at one time, we were in the building where All Bar One is now. That was the assay office. So, you know, I'm really proud. We finally moved out, say, in 2008, and to a brand new purpose-built building. And, you know, everything that I put into that building, everything that was wrong with the old one.
Right.
So we corrected everything.
Yeah.
We had a complete blank piece of canvas. And really, really proud of what we've achieved there. It's we've got a really nice kind of quality front end to the building, and then a very, very functional, efficient back end to the building, which is where all the production happens. And, you know, there's everybody, even 10 years on, everybody that walks into our building and has a look at what we do, they walk into the production area and they go, wow, this is amazing. And it's clinical as well, as you would imagine when you're dealing with such high value items as well at times.
Yes.
It's got to be looked after, and it's a clinical process at the end of the day. And, you know, we pride ourselves on keeping the building like that as well.
Oh, it sounds amazing. It sounds really remarkable. And I can imagine it's, couldn't possibly be open to the public, but it would be, in terms of the security, but it would be wonderful to be able to see it. Are there any photographs?
If you actually look on our website, there is, we do operate throughout the year some tours and talks. So there are our control groups that can come in, and we can my librarian and archivist will do a talk on the office, a brief history, as I've sort of kind of given you this morning, and then they will take small groups round, and you can actually see what happens in there.
Grand.
It's not all kind of closely guarded secrets.
No. Super great. So we've talked about how you've been in the role for 25 years, but you joined the office before that and worked there for a few years. Is that correct?
Yes. I was only reading yesterday that I think the average person these days will have at least 12 to 15 jobs in their life. It's looking like I'm probably only going to have one. My mum worked at the ASSE office, and she worked in the laboratory. And when I was 15, I used to go in the school holidays. I used to go and fetch the sandwiches, and for the staff, I used to go and sweep the yard and that kind of thing. And then in 1977, it was Silver Jubilee year, and I'm sure many of your listeners will probably recollect the silver ingots that everybody used to buy, and they got the big hallmarks down them.
Yes.
And it was a commemorative year because it was the Silver Jubilee, so they had Her Majesty's, the Queen's head applied as well to the items. And there was hundreds of thousands of these being manufactured.
Yes.
In Sheffield.
Right.
And we were hallmarking those, and we couldn't keep up with it, and the ASSE office recruited staff. And at the time, I'd just left Jordanthorpe School, and did I want to carry on studying? I kind of did, but I also kind of wanted this new Suzuki 400cc motorbike. So I applied and I was offered a job at the ASSE office and hallmarking. So I joined the ASSE office at the age of 17 and started work there. I got the motorbike that I wanted, move forward within the business, and then kind of thought to myself, do you know what? I actually like this.
Yes.
It fits for me. So I went to college. The ASSE master at the time was very, he was an ex-school teacher himself. He used to teach at Rollinson School, and he encouraged me to go and develop my career. So by more education.
Right.
So I became a qualified silversmith.
Yes.
I took, at the time, we were then kind of, computers were coming out as well. And so we, you know, kind of did a bit of computer courses and gradually worked my way up through the business. Within 3 years, I applied for the production manager's job.
Yeah.
And he kind of said, well, you know, you've been here 3 years, Carson. What do you know about the job? And I said, not really, I don't know anything about the job. And he said, well, you know, you're not going to get it. I said, I know I'm not. But at the end of the day, what I want to tell you is I want to move on.
Right.
I want to progress, and I want responsibility, and, you know, I want my career to carry on here. And within 12 months, I had my own department. It was a small department with three people. And it was at the time, it was working with all second-hand items that come in. So it was kind of very specialist, and kicked on from there, really, and so made a career for it. So from 1977, I am now 41 years into my employment at Sheffield ASSE office.
Absolutely wonderful story. And that laying down a marker that you wanted to take on responsibility there and wanted to grow within the organisation. I mean, what a great piece of advice as well.
You've got to push yourself. Yeah. You know, nobody will come to you and say, do you fancy being promoted? Mm. You've got to put yourself in the shop window. And I don't think that was kind of very preempted at the time when I look back, but then I think to myself, that was a smart move you made.
Yeah.
And you've got to do that in a business. You've got to make sure that people know that you're hungry for, if that's what you want to do.
Yes.
You know, for me, that's what I always wanted to do. I always wanted to really take charge of things. In fact, you know, it's so much so that this week for my special dinner, I've had one or two of my staff have been helping organise the event. And on the day of the dinner, they banned me from work.
Did they?
They said, you can't come in. You'll interfere. You'll want to run everything. Just stay away. And I kept phoning the office up, trying to speak to people. What's happening? Is everything all right for tonight? And nobody would answer the phones to me at all. It was a nightmare, painful day. It was like, what's happening? But I do like to take control of things, but, you know, delegate as well. That's key to it. Key to any successful manager as well. You've got to delegate, have a good team around you, and let other people take the slack at the end of the day.
Yes.
I can come out this morning and talk to you, and I know that at the end of the day, the work's happening, the production's happening, and you know all those parcels will be out tonight on the security vehicles, going back to where they came from.
Yes.
And that's down to your team that you've got around you.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And you've got to be able to trust them. You've got to be able to delegate and so on. Grand. Super. Well, Ashley, this has been such an enjoyable discussion. I've found it fascinating, and I'm sure listeners have too. I imagine if we were to cut you in half, I'm sorry for the horrible imagery here, but if we were to cut you in half, we'd find gold, silver, palladium and platinum. But when you're not at work and you're not immersed in hallmarking, what are your passions? I know football is one, but tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm very interested in football and fast cars.
Right.
Really, that's kind of my passion. So I've currently involved as a director of Chesterfield Football Club.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've not had a great run over the last couple of years, but
nope.
We are working hard to turn the fortunes round of the football club. So I am very involved with the club and running that. So we're optimistic for this weekend.
Yep.
So that kind of takes a lot of my time up away from work. Cars, I love cars. I love nice cars. I'm OCD with car cleaning.
Are you?
So I don't know where that stems from, kind of the way that we treat the jewellery and things at work, but I'm seriously OCD with cars. I have to vac my car out every day, wash it, wax it every week. I've even been on car valeting courses as
have
well.
You really?
Just to, okay. Just to perfect the techniques when you're cleaning cars.
Are we talking modern cars classic cars?
Yeah, I just like kind of nice sports cars, modern cars, really.
What's your dream car?
Oh, I think probably the McLarens. Mm. I really do like the some of the McLarens are amazing. Aston Martins are still a beautiful car, and the Bentleys, all the handmade kind of British,
yes,
traditional kind of nice leather smell in the car, that sort of thing are the dream cars, I suppose, at the end of the day.
Yep.
But you can't beat on a Sunday morning washing your car and polishing it off and driving it out in the sunshine, and it's looking absolutely gleaming.
Right. So, a real pleasure for you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I've really found this absolutely fascinating. It's been great speaking with you, Ashley. We talked a little bit about the fact that from time to time there are public tours available, and their details on the website. So can I ask you to give the website address out for us, please? And we'll tweet a link to it as well.
Yeah, so it's www.assayoffice.com. ASSAY office, all one word, assayoffice.co.uk. And there is information on there about tours and talks and a lot of other information as well on hallmarking.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on 25 years in post. Look forward to an interview in 15 years' time when you get to 40 years in post and exceed the record, the longest serving assay master. But that's been really interesting speaking with you, Ashley Carson, Sheffield's assay master. Thank you so much for coming in today.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live's weekly business and social enterprise programme with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been talking today with Ashley Carson, Sheffield's Assay Master. What a fascinating chat it has been. I've really, really enjoyed it. Hope you have too. And if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, well, don't panic. The podcast of today's show will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today. So you'll be able to catch that. It's nearly time for us to go. Time flies when you're having fun. Time flies when you have interesting guests. But we will be back on air next Friday with further interesting guests for you to enjoy. Plenty to talk about then. But don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. We'll be on from 10 all the way through to noon with James, with Sam, with the crew. So tune in, enjoy that. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you, Ashley Carson, Sheffield's Assay Master, for coming in and talking with us in the studio. Absolutely fascinating. Check out the website. Book yourself on a talk or a tour. Thank you also, Sangeeta, in the studio with us as our sound engineer. And thank you for listening. So it's time for us to play out with a track of music. And what could be more apt than the track chosen by today's guest, Ashley Carson? This is Gold. It's Spandau Ballet, and I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I hope you enjoyed the chat with Ashley. Here we go.
This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.